There's nothing more unequal than the equal distribution to unequals. I'll explain that next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio with New York Times best-selling author and your host, Doug Andrew.
This is Doug Andrew speaking to you, our incredible national audience, from our three-dimensional wealth studios nestled at the base of the majestic Rocky Mountains. This show is about empowering you, people and organizations that want to optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower their authentic wealth. Well, folks, recently we were in the greater San Francisco Bay Area, and I love traveling throughout the country and speaking and teaching audiences. We conduct these half-day educational events called Retire by Design. And we had five wonderful cities that we were able to teach in. And I usually devote the first third of the Retire by Design talking about the bigger picture. When we mention the word assets, most people think of things like, you know, your house, your real estate, your cash, your stocks, your bonds, and so forth. But whenever I ask people, what are the most important assets that you value, that you cherish, that you possess on this earth? And everybody goes, health, family, relationships, faith, beliefs. Yeah, these kinds of assets involve people. So we call these human assets. They are our core assets. And so I put these under the foundational assets because we call this three-dimensional wealth radio because there are actually three dimensions of true or authentic wealth. Only one dimension has to do with money. The other two dimensions have to do with your values, your family, your health, and also the intellectual dimension, which is your formal education, wisdom, which is a product of knowledge times experiences, your alliances, your skills, and so forth. And so it's like a three-legged stool. When people say, Doug, what is it that you do? I say, well, I take the wobble out of people's life because a lot of people are wobbling on just money, money, money. And you can't believe how many people at the end of the day, they may have millions of dollars accumulated, and they usually are very forlorn. Doug, what was all this for? I'm not going to take any of this with me at the end of the day when they die, and they realize that they maybe spent a lot of their health accumulating their financial wealth, and later in life, they were spending all their wealth trying to regain that health. Or maybe they accumulated their financial wealth at the expense of relationships with their spouse, their kids, their grandkids, or their God, and they're bankrupt now in those areas, and they tell me, golly, the kids and grandkids don't even want to come around. What was all this for? So this is where many times I help people rethink their thinking, because many times when I have clients that are multimillionaires and billionaires, I'll ask them, how did they build this empire or this net worth? And they'll say, oh, I was raised after the Great Depression, and my parents taught me the value of work. Doug, I have worked so hard, my kids will never have to work as hard as I did. And 20, 30, 40 years later, they come in their retirement years, and they're sort of forlorn, and I go, what's up? And they go, Doug, I don't know what's wrong with our kids and now our grandkids. They don't even know how to work. And I say, well, maybe you stole that from them. Maybe in your attempt to help them, you were hindering them. You always said what made a man out of you was overcoming challenges and the setbacks. And then you thought you were doing your children and grandchildren a favor by bailing them out, rescuing them, giving them handouts. You should have maybe given them a hand up and not a handout. And maybe taught more responsibility and accountability. And now you're wondering why they are hovering around like vultures. When do I get my share? And this is what we call entitlement, okay? And this is what motivated me to help many, many successful people have to abolish the entitlement mentality with their kids and grandkids. And so I wrote the book called Entitlement Abolition. And so when I'm teaching audiences many times, I will ask the audience, okay, now, One of the principles or false belief patterns is that equal distribution is the fairest way to treat those that you care about. And then I say, how many of you out there have a trust? Now, those of you listening to me right now, don't raise your foot off the gas pedal in an affirmative action. But how many of you have a trust? In California, it's amazing. Usually at least 70% of the audiences have a trust. And they're sort of proud. They raise their hand. I have a trust. And then I go, well, I assure you, your kids will never read that document except one page that says how much they get. And I'll bet you when you met with the attorney after about 15 minutes of small talk, once the attorney found out your net worth, the first question they ask you is, well, how many kids have you got? And then what did they start doing in the trust? Dividing up your assets, okay? That's the number one rule if you want to destroy, divide and conquer. They divide it up, okay? As soon as, you say that, you want to be fair, don't you, is what the attorney asks. And they nod their head up and down. And when you nod your head up and down, they go, hot diggity dog, here's another one. And they take your assets and put it into this boilerplate trust document. They take your kids' names and put it into this trust document. And when you die, chunk, 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 it's divided up and dumped in the kids' lap or grandkids. And it ruins half of the children in this country with an entitlement mindset. Oh, when do I get my share? So it's divided up, and sometimes they try to defer or postpone, thinking that saves tax. We dispel that myth at our educational events. And then it's dumped, distributed to ill-prepared heirs, and then it dissipates. Wealth is transferred without a system that fosters responsibility and accountability. And so Abraham Lincoln said, the worst thing you can do for those you love is the things they can do for themselves. Robert Frost said, every affluent father wishes he knew how to give his sons the hardships that made him rich. But we don't want to see our kids suffer, and we think we're doing them a favor when we pay for everything and we dole it out, and then we wonder why they are weak and they can't handle life. And so this is where I introduce the concept of equal opportunity versus equal distribution, because what I said at the beginning of this segment, there's nothing more unequal than the equal distribution to unequals. And people start going into withdrawal when I say that. And I go, hold on, listen to me. Let me give you an example. Now, whatever your belief is of a higher power, I do not believe that our Creator gives equal distribution of blessings to all of us, let's say of health, regardless of how some of us, including myself, may choose to abuse our bodies. Okay? Our Creator doesn't say, well, I'm going to be fair. These healthy people that have been working out and taking care of themselves and they eat smart, I'm going to, of course, they are blessed with good health, but I'm going to also give equal health to these people who are absolutely abusing their bodies, consuming harmful substances. They're not exercising, but I want to be fair. This is called the fairness doctrine. And I think we should all have access to health care. But we go way too far in this country, which causes political divide, when we start demanding, the right to health care, when it's really the responsibility for health care, that the healthy people should pay for the unhealthy people and their habits. OK, let's not go there right now. But that's what causes a lot of political divide. The point is this: our Creator gives all of us equal opportunities, not equal distribution. So if you have a trust, you may want to rethink your thinking. Instead of when you pass away, it's all just divided up, sometimes killing the goose, laying the golden eggs, okay? Many times, because you have to be fair, it requires that you have to sell the assets. You have to sell the business. You have to sell the real estate portfolio because you've got to divide it up equally, and you're killing the goose, laying the golden eggs. What you need to do is provide equal opportunities to your children and grandchildren, not equal distribution. We did this with our children. We never paid for their college. We gave them equal opportunities. If they got a scholarship, we might match it. If they wanted to go on a semester abroad, they had to sacrifice and come up with as much money as they could. Then they might borrow from the family. We call it the family bank. And then they have a method where they pay it back with money, or they mow lawns, or they shampoo carpets, or they paint. But it wasn't just a handout. You want to give your children and grandchildren a hand up, not a handout. And so that's why we talk about equal opportunities. You need to identify your core values and vision and empower your children instead of enable them. You need to have them be self-reliant instead of government-reliant or reliant upon you. Does that make sense?
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
Create a family legacy bank that will last for generations. Welcome back. This is Doug Andrew, Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. If you're just joining us, I was talking in the previous segment about trusts. And if you have a trust, you may want to consider changing the rules of governance from equal distribution to equal opportunities. And if your attorney doesn't know how to do that, I would recommend you give them a copy of my book, Entitlement Abolition, How to Abolish Entitlement Mindset. If your attorney still doesn't know how to change your trust so that it teaches more responsibility and accountability and requiring a little bit of skin in the game instead of just waiting to get your share of the inheritance, then maybe I can point you to an attorney who already understands how to do this. We're not a law firm, but I do teach a lot of attorneys, especially estate planning and tax attorneys, how to better optimize assets for their clients and empower the authentic wealth for their children. So many times when I speak at these Retire by Design half-day events that we love to come out and do, and I'll explain again how you can come to one of these, because we waive the normal $600 tuition and these are free. And so the first third I teach. And we are talking about the big picture, and I talk about the concept of what we refer to as a family bank. Now, when I start talking about a family bank, everybody wants one, but you probably don't know what it is. So let me give you a little bit of insight here, because, yes, these are called Retire by Design, and the final two-thirds of these six-hour educational events talk about how to optimize assets and minimize taxes and how we have helped many, many thousands of people save a quarter of a million, a half a million, three-quarters of a million, 1.2 million of unnecessary tax. And in the final two segments today, I'll talk a little bit about the financial dimension. But right now, let me just give you a little bit of insight into what I mean by a family bank, okay? So when I teach, I use two families as examples, and I don't endorse these families by any means, but they illustrate the point I'm making that I was talking about in the first segment. The first family is the Vanderbilt family. Cornelius Vanderbilt died in 1877, the richest man on earth. He amassed a $105 million fortune by the time he died. He was not very philanthropic. In fact, he only left behind less than 1% of his fortune, $1 million, to charity. Central University, which became Vanderbilt University. Do you know it took 96 years until 1972? Before 120 of his descendants gathered together at Vanderbilt University for their first family reunion, and there was not a millionaire left in the bunch. It was all gone. I mean, the fourth generation was like, what? It's gone? We're not one of them. We have to work. Yeah, shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. They were rolling up their shirt sleeves, having to start over again. It's not unique to America. In Asia, it's rice paddy to rice paddy in three generations. In Europe, it's clogs to clogs in three generations, okay? His grandson, William K. Vanderbilt, said, "It has left me with nothing to hope for, nothing definite to seek or strive for. Inherited wealth has been a real handicap to happiness." Yeah. So I contrast the Vanderbilt family to the Rothschilds. Now, again, I don't endorse these families, but Mayer Amschel Rothschild, okay, he built a banking dynasty in Europe. He died in 1812. They had several children, among them five sons they assigned to European capitals, and they would communicate back and forth with homing pigeons when to buy and when to sell. The point is this: when he died, he did not leave behind an inheritance to his kids. He left behind a repository, a system, what I call a family bank. This is not a chartered bank like down the street. This is a conceptual bank. And this is where the posterity had access to financial help if they needed it, but also the knowledge, attitude, skills, and habits. So this is where they loaned their heirs money, and the loans had to be repaid, or they went into joint ventures. If you needed help with a college education, you had to get good grades, apply. If you got approved, the family bank would loan you the money to get your education. But when you graduated and started making money, you paid the loan back with a nominal interest rate. So your kids and grandkids would have the same wherewithal, okay? Also, the knowledge and experiences that you gained, good and bad, had to be shared with the entire family horizontally, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews. This wasn't just a parents to kids to grandkids family secret. Sharing is having more. If you didn't share, you were out of the loop. You couldn't participate in the family bank. The third rule is the family gathered at least once a year to reaffirm their virtues and intentions with their vision and values and the charities they were going to give to. If you did not show up to determine what your values were, what you stood for, you were out of the loop. Guess what happened to the Rothschilds' wealth? It grew and flourished, and the Vanderbilt fortune dissipated and disappeared. That's why I use the two stories. And so what I've helped many, many people do is establish their own family legacy bank. And this is where it's more important that you capture the knowledge, the attitudes, the skills, and the habits. And the first letter of all of those four spell the acronym KASH, knowledge, attitudes, skills, and habits. I'd rather leave behind the KASH to my posterity than the CASH, because now I'm leaving behind how to fish to my kids and grandkids instead of dumping a bunch of fish in their lap, which in the previous segment I was explaining usually ruins them. And so if you were going to be playing in a golf tournament and you had the choice of using a professional golfer like Phil Mickelson's swing, or you could use his clubs, what would you choose? Well, I'd rather have his swing, not the clubs. Well, I've noticed that most estate planning attorneys focus on dividing up the golf clubs and the trophy, so to speak, among the kids and the grandkids when you die. I'd rather leave behind the swing or how to fish to my kids and grandkids than the golf clubs and the trophies. Does that make sense? And so people come to learn and they get new insights and they set up a family bank. But then they want to know, Doug, how do you fund your family bank? And so, yeah, we have rules of governance where our posterity, they can borrow money and pay it back. They can go into joint ventures and they can do all kinds of things. But it's not just a handout. It's designed to empower our family members instead of enable them. They don't just get an inheritance. What they get is an opportunity. That's what I was talking about. They have equal opportunities to have access to the family bank, both the knowledge, attitude, skills, and habits, and the CASH, if they're responsible and accountable, but they have to have some skin in the game, okay? They don't just sit around, oh, when do I get my share of this family wealth? Because that ruins half of the kids in this country when they get an inheritance, okay? And so people say, well, what are the rules of governance and how do you fund it? Well, my favorite vehicle in the family bank is a max-funded indexed universal life insurance contract, structured correctly and funded properly. It's called the Laser Fund because what it will do is generate on every $1 million. I'm going to simplify this. You don't need a million, but every $1 million will generate usually about $100,000 a year of tax-free cash flow in the family bank for all kinds of purposes without depleting principal. But then every time a family member passes away, and that's usually the older ones, For every million they might have in a portfolio of laser funds, when they die, it may blossom to double that, to 2 million or 2.5 million. I'm 70. If I died tomorrow in an accident, every million would blossom to about 2 million and transfer tax-free in the family bank. So we'll always have the wherewithal. We'll never run out of money as our generations continue to pass on. Does that make sense? That's a family bank.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.